I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky.
Okay, so technically true, yep. But also very misleading in light of the facts that came out later. That's a good example of deliberately wordsmithing.
Yes.
And trying to get away with it on a technicality.
Yeah.
Technically true.
I
didn't inhale. Yeah. Right. Welcome to Making Yourself Clear. I'm Chris.
I'm Patrick.
And today we're going to talk about the 4 unwritten rules for clear communication. You ever wonder why some conversations flow smoothly? You walk away feeling like, okay, I got what I needed there. And then other times it's not the case, right? You come away going, I feel like that person technically answered my question, but I really got nothing of value there. That was useless.
Yeah, I've definitely walked away from conversations and just sort of, they've been head scratchers and been like, that was all over the place. I didn't feel like I understood why we were in one setting and then hopped to another setting.
Yeah, when things bounce around, when something just feels like it went sideways.
Right.
And obviously this happens in a million different ways, but today we're going to talk about these 4 rules or maxims that were developed by this guy named Paul Grice. It's a model for understanding what works in a conversation and what doesn't. So when things fall apart, you can look in one of these 4 buckets and figure out what was missing. So Paul Grice was a philosopher of language, and he was exploring how it is that people come to understand each other in communication, because there's the words we use, but then there's a lot of meaning that is unsaid, but mostly communication works pretty well anyway. And so he had this insight that obviously conversations aren't just random exchanges. He framed them as cooperative efforts.
Right.
Meaning there's like an intention on both sides. We're cooperating, trying to achieve a common goal here through this communication process. And we assume the other person is also cooperating as well. So out of that, he came up with this thing called the cooperative principle. He worded it in a clumsy way. You want to read it? It's super old timey.
Yeah, sure. Prose. So we've got it here on the screen. It says, make your contribution as is required at the stage at which it occurs, by the accepted purpose or direction of the talk exchange.
So super old-timey, turgid prose, academic sounding.
Yeah.
Which is ironic, given that he's talking about clear communication,
and it's just this sort of very, very dense academic sentence.
Clumsy phrasing.
Yeah.
But if we're to translate that into just plain English, what's he trying to say? He's trying to say, communicate what needs to be said, when it needs to be said,
yeah,
in a way that helps the conversation move forward.
Yeah. Don't give too much information. Don't give not enough information. Stay on topic.
Yeah.
You know, and deliver it in a way where if you're talking to me, I understand what you're saying.
Where I can follow the plot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he broke that down. You just kind of summarized the 4 maxims implicitly. Maxims are kind of like rules. They're not laws that are etched in stone. They're not commandments, but they're really good guidelines.
Right. So it's not like rules with grammar, for example, but maxims.
Maxims. Yeah. Good word for it. So the 4 maxims are maxim of quantity, quality, relation or relevance, mm-hmm, and manner. And we're going to break down what each of those mean. We're going to give examples of some intuitive examples of how these apply. We'll talk about what happens when you violate each one of them.
Right.
And
that's where things get kind of fun.
They can.
Yeah.
They can totally get fun. So let's do a little deeper dive into each one.
So the first one we mentioned was the maxim of quantity. So saying enough, but not saying too much at the same time, right? We want to provide the right amount of information, but not so much that it just becomes overwhelming or that it's not pertinent to what it is that we're saying. So for example, if I were to say to you, Chris, what time is the meeting? And then you were to say to me 2 p.m., that's exactly what I needed. I know when that is. No need for over-explaining. But if you were to say, oh, it's tomorrow afternoon. Well, okay, great. I know it's tomorrow afternoon. But what time?
What time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I said what time is the meeting, I meant like a specific time.
So that's not enough information.
Not enough information for you to say in the afternoon. It's uncertain. I don't get the information that I need. And I don't have the clarification that I was seeking.
And it's frustrating because you're like, now I have to ask a second question.
Yeah.
And if you had just thought about it a little bit, you would know that that's not enough information for me to, that doesn't satisfy the need that I'm driving at here.
So it's not as cooperative a conversation as it could have been if you were just listening to me intently and you said, oh, time, all right, what time tomorrow? 2 p.m. 2 p.m. tomorrow is the time.
And then on the flip side, there can be too much information.
Right. So too much information would be like, if I, same question, what time is the meeting tomorrow? And you say, oh, it's tomorrow at 2 p.m. It's on the third floor in the boardroom just after our finance call. The finance calls usually go a little long, so it might be a little later than that. Oh, also, I think Sarah's going to be there, and Sarah's super annoying.
And at this point, I'm just waiting for an exit. I got what I needed in the first, literally the first word you said was 2 p.m. I got what I need, and now I'm just suffering. I'm enduring you, and I'm waiting for this to be over. One place this shows up, well, two that come to mind. One is if I ask someone for the address. What's the address of that place we're going?
Mm-hmm.
And they launch into a lengthy set of directions.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Turn left on Bathurst. And then when you get to the KFC, you've gone too far. And it's like, especially directions that involve landmarks. And I can tell they're walking through it in their mind.
Yeah. Especially if it's an area of town you've never been or it's a place you've never been. Like, that. None of that helps me.
Also, it's 2025. I'm going to put it in my Google Maps.
Absolutely.
I don't need the directions.
Yeah. Well, and if you had needed directions, you would have said, could you give me the directions? Not where are we going?
Right, but...
Or what's the address?
Yeah, I just want the address. I'm putting it into Google Maps, and it's going to give me directions that are better than the ones you're giving me anyway, and now you're giving me too much. Another one of maybe a less comical example, this happens all the time with highly technical people giving presentations to a less technical audience.
Oh, yeah.
Like a presentation to senior management, and it's an engineer giving the presentation, or to a salesperson.
I was working with a group of engineers today, actually, and... Yeah, they have a very sort of specific way of communicating with one another that does not work for just, you know,
they love the details.
Guy. Yeah.
And they can lose sight of the fact that not everyone has the same technical background. Mm-hmm. And so they'll talk right over people's heads.
Yeah.
And then wonder why the communication misses the mark and maybe won't notice when their audience's eyes are completely glazed over. So that would be a violation of this quantity maxim on the side of too much. You're giving me way too much information, way too much detail.
So just enough that I know the answer to my question and no more, no less.
A way that I've come to think about communication is I put on my product manager hat from my days as a product guy.
Yeah.
And if you think of the communication as a product or as a feature as part of a product, from the product manager perspective, there's a few things you think about. You say, okay, who's my user avatar? Who's my end user? And what's a description of their archetype? What is their level of technical sophistication? Are they busy? Do they have lots of time on their hands? Are they highly technical? Are they like an old grandmother who's afraid of her toaster? Who am I dealing with? And then what's the use case? If my communication is a product, what are they going to do with it?
Right.
And from there, if I know who they are and what they're trying to accomplish, I can tailor the information I'm providing in such a way that it helps them achieve their goal. So there's a use case and a user.
Mm-hmm.
The key there is the focus is on the other person and how can I be most helpful to them? And that'll tell you how much information to give them. And it'll also give you some clues about the language to use, what level of abstraction. So quantity, say enough, but not too much. That's basically what that one means.
So as we're going through these, take a minute and pause and reflect and say, am I the kind of person who gives too much detail? Am I the kind of person who doesn't give quite enough detail?
So if you violate this one with too little information, you haven't really answered their question and they're going to come back with follow-up questions. They might be frustrated because I asked you for a dollar and you gave me a nickel. I need a little more. And then on the other side, too much is information fatigue. People tune out. It becomes effortful to listen.
And that's not asking for a dollar and getting 10.
No, it's asking for a dollar and getting 100 pennies strewn across the backyard and you've got to go collect them.
That's quantity.
That's quantity.
That's good. I like that.
So practically speaking, check in with yourself. Ask, what does this person need to know right now? What are they trying to do and what do they need right now? And then give them that and only that.
Second maxim is quality.
Yes.
So when we're talking about quality, it's what you believe to be true. I'm not making things up. I'm not saying something that I think, you know, maybe is true, but I don't have enough evidence to support it.
And you're not lying, obviously.
And I'm not lying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So say what you believe to be true and don't say anything that you don't have evidence to support.
Yeah. And those are related but separate concepts. The first thing is sort of obvious. Don't lie. Don't say something you know to be false because that's clearly not cooperative. Then there's what you believe to be true, which is related to but not the same as what you have good evidence for. Because there are people who believe that the earth is flat.
Right.
And some of them genuinely believe that. But you don't have good evidence for that belief.
No.
So,
well, they would argue that
they would argue that
that's a whole other road.
Can of worms. But it's check in with yourself, not just I think this is true, but do I have it on good evidence? Like, how solid is my belief? What's the basis for it? And we're not saying that if you don't have high confidence or good evidence, you can't say anything. It's just qualify it. Say, you know what? I'm not sure about this. If I had to take a guess, I would say X or Y. Or you can say, you know what? I've seen the numbers. I've thought about this a lot. I'm like very confident in this. Specify your level of confidence so that the person knows how much weight to attribute to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's perfect, right? If you were to say to me, listen, I'm not sure I have the answer, but here's what I think based on what I know.
Mm-hmm.
You've given me everything I need there for me to qualify what you've said and for me to understand.
Yeah. And if I'm going to make an educated guess, I'll say, I don't actually know.
Yeah.
For whatever it's worth, this would be my intuition about it. And then mm-hmm. the person can take that for what it's worth. But I haven't misrepresented the certainty or the confidence that they should have in the statement I'm about to make.
Yeah. So examples of following that maxim would be, if I were to say, do you know if we're close to hitting the numbers that we hit last year?
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, well, I haven't seen the report, but I believe the numbers are close to last quarter's. That's good quality information.
Yeah, I'm specifying it as opposed to saying something like, oh, yeah, we'll be fine. We're going to beat the numbers, even though I haven't looked at the data.
Right.
Now, you might take from that a higher level of certainty than is warranted.
Right.
And
Well, he seemed very confident when he said it. So
right. And then you might go and make decisions based on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not cooperated because I've set you up to make bad decisions to have a belief in something that's not justified.
Why have you set me up with a sense of false confidence so that I'm going in saying, I heard it from Chris and he would know. He reads the reports.
Trust me, there it's flat.
Right.
Just go with it. Trust me.
I can see the other side of the street, so it must be. It
must be flat. Totally.
Yeah. The impact that this has, I don't trust you.
Mm-hmm.
Once I find out the truth, there's an erosion of trust there, or potentially I spread that information around. Somebody asks me the same question and I give them the same answer that you gave me.
And then that hurts your credibility.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's funny because we communicate our level of confidence in something often in body language and tone of voice. And,
mm-hmm.
and there's an air of certainty that people can project.
Yeah.
And in the moment, it's quite convincing. If someone says, I'm sure of this, I know what I'm talking about, bang, 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 we're more likely to take them seriously. And I've had people who are very bold in their communication. And if I later find out that they were just wrong or that they don't really know what they're talking about, now I'm that's a charlatan.
I've got a great personal example for this.
Yeah.
My band was playing a show at this old rundown farm and it was nice, hot August night. And so we're playing in this old rundown barn. And I say to one of the guys who I believed to be the owner at the time, who I found out was not, said like, how strong is this thing? Would it be all right if I like got up on top and like started singing from up top? He goes, yeah, it's strong enough. And he sort of gave it a little pat. And I was like, okay, great. And then after we finished our set, I got down and I had swaths of people coming over and said, I've been coming to this festival for years. You're the first person I've ever seen do that. And I can't believe that you trusted that old thing. And I was like, oh, I didn't have the information right at all. But he seemed so confident when he said,
you'll be fine.
Nah, this thing, this old girl.
It'll hold.
Yeah, it'll hold. And here's me, like I could have put my foot straight through the thing or worse, fallen on top of a guitar player. So, yeah.
Right. So check in with yourself. Be mindful of how sure you are and not just how sure you feel.
Because mm-hmm.
there's that subjective feeling of confidence in something. I actually read about this somewhere and it's fascinating. When we do that intuitive check for that feeling of confidence
mm-hmm.
in a statement or a belief, it's based on two things. It's firstly based on how easily it comes to mind.
Right.
So how accessible that thought or memory or fact is. So it came to mind easily. And then how internally consistent it feels. In other words, if I don't also have in my consciousness a contradicting thought.
Right.
So it popped into my head and I can't think of anything that contradicts it. High certainty.
Yeah.
What you'll notice about those two things that our brains do to determine our level of confidence is that neither of those checks have anything to do with what's out there
with
in the actual
reality,
world.
Yeah.
None of those are evidence-based. They're just, it's just a cognitive smoothness versus dissonance thing.
Right.
And it's entirely based on what my database could call up on a moment's notice. So don't trust your subjective feeling of confidence. Check in with the evidence. How do I know this?
Right.
did I just hear it from some guy?
Yeah.
Or is this a subject I've researched? Or did I read it from a credible source?
Yeah. Did I ask the guy, hey, is this your barn?
Right. Is this your barn? Are you a structural engineer?
Yeah. Yeah. How do you know this thing's safe?
When was the last time this structure was inspected?
I spoke to him after. He said, well, it looked safe to me.
Looked good to me. Exactly. So check in. Like, did I get this from a reliable source?
Yeah.
And because mostly we don't do primary research to determine what's true or not. Mostly we rely on information we got secondhand. But is your source good? Is it just something that floated by on Facebook?
Yeah.
Or did it come from a peer-reviewed source or a trusted news publication?
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say don't say something if you're not sure. It's just be explicit about the level of justification for your belief in a thing. Like, I don't know, here's what I would guess versus, no, I did my PhD dissertation on this. You should probably listen to me.
So again, check in with yourself. Is this a rule or a maxim that you violate sometimes or often when you're having conversations? And what can you do to clean up those areas to have better and more cooperative conversations with other people?
Mm-hmm. One little phrase here that I like on this one is this idea of epistemic humility.
Mm-hmm.
So epistemic from epistemology, which is the study of knowledge. How do we come to know things? What are valid knowledge claims? What's the solid basis for claiming to know something? We should probably do a whole other episode on epistemology.
Yeah.
But have some humility there. You can speak confidently within your knowledge zone, stuff you know well.
So that's something you did earlier, right? You said, well, to the best of my knowledge.
Right.
Yeah.
But in the aftermath of the 2020 election, when there was a bunch of conspiracy stuff floating around social media about elections technology.
Yep.
And specifically about elections technology from Dominion Voting Systems, my former company, where I was a product manager for 13 years.
Where you had quite a bit of knowledge.
I'm an expert on that.
Yep.
Firsthand, actual expert. So I was speaking with a high degree of confidence and I was making sure people knew that. Like, I was the product manager on this product line for a decade.
Yeah.
You should listen to me here.
I know my stuff.
Be clear on how well you know something and what the basis is for your knowledge.
What's our third maxim?
Maxim of relation or relevance.
Okay. So relation.
Relevance is the word I prefer.
Relevance is a word that I think works better as well, but we're talking language that's based in philosophical concepts,
philosophy,
and so that sort of thing.
So they have their pretentious philosopher speak, but relation, it's related
shots
to the topic.
Shots fired to all the philosophers.
Shots fired. Relation is what you're sharing related to the topic at hand or to the objective, to what the other person is trying to achieve in the conversation.
Yeah. So what would be an example of following that maxim if I'm trying to be relevant?
Some of it came up earlier in the quantity thing when it was like, what time's the meeting? 2 p.m. But then you went off into talking about Sarah. And
right, I did, yeah.
How long the finance meetings go. And that's not just extra, but all the extra was not really relevant. It doesn't
right.
help.
Yeah.
This one shows up a lot when you think about ways that people dodge questions or deceive each other.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of the politician, someone will ask a very specific direct question.
Yeah.
And then they just ignore the question and they go right to their talking
points.
And
that is becoming more and more commonplace.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like you'll ask about, what do you think of such and such immigration policy? Well, what about Hunter Biden's laptop?
Right.
Okay. What does that have to do with immigration policy?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a tactic, right? Answer the question that you want them to have asked rather than the question that they did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a way that people violate this in order to dodge the question.
Right. So following the maxim would be, if I were to say, are we ready to launch the campaign? And then you say, well, no, we're still waiting on some approvals. Legal haven't gone through it yet. So we need to wait.
Right. Waiting on legal approval is some relevant background
yeah.
to why the answer is no, we're not ready to launch. And here's some background on why, which is relevant. But if you were to say something like, well, you know, these things are complicated and, you know, let's talk about HR, right? We don't have the headcount we need and blah, blah, blah. And
right.
that's HR's fault. Okay, we're off track here and it doesn't really help me.
Yeah, I was asking you about launching a campaign and now you're telling me that you don't like the HR lady.
Now you're talking about whose fault it is
right.
that we're not going to launch on time. I
yeah.
didn't ask whose fault it was. I just want the facts that are relevant. So stay on topic. Don't change the subject. Don't try to dodge the question. This is where people can get evasive.
Which can be an incredibly frustrating experience,
mm-hmm.
right? When people are dodging your questions or they're not answering the questions that you're asking, it makes you feel like they're wasting your time. The conversation can really tank very quickly.
It can. And this is one where people talk past each other, I think, a lot in conflict. Here's where it's good to clarify intent, because we sometimes end up on different pages in a conversation if our intention shifts.
Yeah.
So let's say you want to give me feedback on something I didn't do very well or something I said that upset you.
Yeah.
And you're giving me the feedback. And if your intention is this is a cooperative dialogue and you want to show me a blind spot, let's say you said, hey, when you said that thing, it hurt my feelings. Mm-hmm. Next time, can you not make fun of me in public? Okay, yes. Yes, I can. No, I can't. Whatever. But I might also say, well, it's not my fault or you did it too. Or,
right. Yeah.
You know, all the defensive stuff is actually not relevant to the intention and it changes the topic. Now I'm not actually cooperating. Now I'm deflecting and defending.
Right. Yeah.
And I have changed the intent of the conversation without disclosing it. And now we're talking at cross purposes.
Yeah,
that's literally what it is.
Well, last week you said you would empty the dishwasher and you didn't. And when I came home from work, I was tired and I had to do it.
Well, you didn't walk the dog.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so, irrelevant.
Not relevant to the... We can talk about that, but we're talking about this right now.
Yeah, it's a thing we do. We deflect, we change the subject in order to avoid blame, let's say.
Sure.
And then you're not cooperating anymore.
Yeah.
And that's the key thing. These are the four maxims of...
A cooperative conversation.
It's the cooperative principle, right? So if I change the subject, if I dodge, if I parry, if I deflect, all the whataboutism is uncooperative. And that's why it doesn't work. And it pisses people off.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, if you're checking in with yourself, you know, which of these maxims do you break or do you not adhere to? This is one that probably many of us have difficulty towing the line on, especially in those high conflict moments like Chris just mentioned.
Or if you're someone who just really likes to talk, or if you know someone like this, they start down a line of thought and they're telling a story and then it goes off on a tangent and then the tangent takes another tangent. And before you know it, you're like, where are we going here?
Yeah.
What's like, this is just a stream of consciousness rant and I don't even know what I've lost the plot completely.
So that's relation. How does what you're saying relate back to the original content?
To the intent. How does it help move things forward?
Yeah.
There's another way of looking at it.
That's a good one. Yep. And then so those are those first three. We've got one more, right? There are four maxims.
Yeah. Fourth one's called the maxim of manner. And this one's about being clear, unambiguous, and orderly or structured.
Manner's a tough word to decipher here. I like to think of it as clarity instead. It helps me sort of wrap my head around it a little better.
Two things come to mind for me when I think about it. One is in your word choice. Sometimes we use ambiguous, fuzzy language that's overly general or abstract.
Yeah.
Again, politicians speak in what they call glittering generalities.
Mm.
And it's like, I know what all of those words mean, but there's not much for me to grab onto.
Yeah, there's just kind of a word salad there.
It's a word salad. Yeah. So use crisp, precise, concrete language rather than fuzzy, vague, ambiguous language.
Yeah. I mean, manner, the manner in which we speak to one another, or another way to put that would be the way we speak to one another, right? So the way I speak to you, if it's ambiguous and if it's fuzzy and it's in glittering generalities, then we're not having a cooperative conversation. But if the manner in which I speak to you is clear, it's orderly, and I avoid ambiguity, then all that information that I'm trying to convey is you've got clarity around it.
Yeah, because if you're using fuzzy, ambiguous wording, I've got a... guess what you mean to some extent, or the words you use could have multiple meanings in this given context and I could get it wrong.
Yeah.
So you're not really helping me understand you if you're choosing words that could mean more than one thing, or if you're beating around the bush and now I've got to do the heavy lifting to try to interpolate and figure out what you mean. Don't make me work any harder than I have to figure out what you're saying. Just say it. So be direct, use simple language.
Well, you sort of brought it up before when you were talking about when you think about the person this conversation is for, right? Or when you're writing technical.
A spec or
So clear, you know, here's step one, here's step two, here's step three. Like you're not going to step three and then step one and then four. Mm. You're giving me an ordered list
that's the other
clear
piece.
And concise and understandable.
Yeah.
One thing that you'll hear people say, oh, we got to fix shit. Oh, we got some things to look at before we do that. What things? What are you talking about? So there's just this opaqueness to it that I don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah. So you touched on the second part of it. We talked about word choice and using direct, clear, tangible, concrete language.
Yeah.
The other part is the structure, the sequence.
Mm-hmm.
One way to look at this is like a well-written recipe. Step one, preheat oven to 450. Step two, mix flour and milk and eggs.
Yeah.
With a blender on low setting. Walk me through it in a sequence that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're bouncing all over the place, you're like, okay, so you're baking the cake and then, oh yeah, but the eggs, don't forget about the eggs. Okay, well, when did I need to know about the egg?
I literally had this happen to me. I had someone who was telling me the best dessert you'll ever have. It's pistachio pudding mix, graham crackers, and then whipped cream. And you just mix them together and you put them on top of the graham crackers. And I was like, oh, okay, great. And I went home and I made it. And I came back and I was like, hey, Trev, the recipe that you gave me, it was okay, but it was kind of grainy. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, when I mixed the whipped cream and the powder together, it was kind of grainy. And he started laughing. He said, that's awesome. I said, what's awesome? And he's like, you didn't make the pudding? You said to mix the ingredients. So I did.
Right.
And he just kept going, that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He didn't specify.
He did not specify.
You have to actually make the pudding.
You have to make the pudding first, and then you mix the pudding with the whipped cream.
Great example. So structure the communication in a linear way that is clear and that is easy for the other person to follow. And this is another trap people fall into. If you know a topic really well, you can kind of bounce around. And if you've got it all in your head, you know where to put all the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But the other person, if it's new to them, you can lose them so easily.
Sure,
so
yeah.
Take a minute, pause, and think things through in a sequence that allows them to follow it. And another tip I give people is it can be useful to speak more like the way you write in a certain sense. If you're writing a numbered list, you're going to number them.
Right.
One, yeah. Two, three. And you can do that verbally too. You can say, you know what? There are three key points here. One, bang, bang, bang. Two, and then three. And just by using the numbers,
yeah,
you're helping the person mentally organize it. So little tips like
one,
that.
One, make the pudding. Two, mix it with the whipped cream. Three,
put it on top of the graham crackers.
Not mix the pudding and whipped cream.
Mix it all together.
Mix it all together and you're good to go.
Exactly. So this one is the one that probably takes the most thought in advance. If we're talking about the quantity of information, it should be easy enough to determine how much a person needs to know and give them what they need, but no more. Quality also, is it true? How do you know? How confident are you and why?
Yeah.
These are easy check-ins. Relevance should be fairly easy to determine. This one's more of a style thing, and it's about structuring your thinking before you speak. So you want your to be a couple steps ahead of your mouth.
Yeah, this is going to be the one that's going to be the loosest and take the most work to tighten up. If this is the one that you violate, you know, some people are going to be better at some of these than others, but if this is the one that you need to tighten up, this one might take the most work to really hone it in. But I think that what you said is great. Speak how you would write.
Yeah, or at least borrow the structure you might use in a written communication and don't be afraid to incorporate some of that into your spoken word.
What I like about that too is like then my mouth can't move faster than my brain because I have to think, okay, how would I write this?
Exactly. So quantity, quality, relevance, and then manner, which is this bit about the word choice and the sequence. So
here's where it gets
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Intentional flouting.
Right. So we gave some examples of what happens when you break some of these rules and why it becomes less cooperative or less clear.
Yeah. So that's when we're breaking the rules in an unintentional way. But you can also break these rules and be intentional about it.
And where people's minds might go when they hear that is deception, right? I'm going to deliberately lie to you, or I'm going to deliberately give you less information than you need in order to mislead you.
Right. So that's different than what Grice called flouting. I'm doing it in a way where there's a strong implication and you pick up on it.
Exactly. So you're breaking a rule in a way that's obvious to both the speaker and the listener.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're breaking the rule in itself communicates something. And it's still cooperative because we're both in on it. Like sarcasm is a good example. If you stub your toe and I say smooth move.
Right.
It's funny. And you know that I'm not being serious.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not complimenting my smooth moves.
Right. It violates the maxim of quality because it's not true that that was smooth of you. It
exactly.
was clumsy, but it was obviously not true. And you know it and I know it. And the actual meaning of that communication has nothing to do with whether or not that was a smooth move. The meaning of it is it's comic relief. Right?
Yeah.
I'm saying something funny. I'm teasing you a little bit. And we're both on the same page about it.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of nuances to ways that we can flout these rules that everybody gets.
Or flouting quantity. So I'm not giving you quite enough information, but in a way where, so I'm saying something by omission.
Yeah, there's a good example of this one. So it's a student applying to work with a particular professor for grad school and uses an undergrad prof as a reference.
Yeah.
And so, okay, the grad school prof reaches out to the reference professor and says, what can you tell me about this student? And the professor says, I can say that he attended all lectures.
Right. That's
all he said. So clearly violates the maxim of quantity
and even relevance, because that's not what I was asking.
But there's a lot of subtext in there. There's a lot.
Tells me everything I need to know.
Yeah.
So by deliberately, significantly undershooting the quantity principle, what I'm saying without saying it is, I do not recommend this person.
Yeah.
That's a good example. It's a clear violation, but we're on the same page about it.
I don't want to say anything bad about him, so I won't say anything at all.
Right. Exactly. What about the quality? Sarcasm is a great example of this one.
Yeah. Right? Well, like you said, smooth move, right?
Smooth move.
A good one for quality.
Clearly not true,
yeah.
But the message is clear.
So we've done quantity. We've talked about quality. What about relation? So relation would be you shift the topic. A great one here, I think, is when things get tense. If you're in a boardroom or if you're just with some friends and things start getting tense and tension starts ratcheting up and then someone says, yeah, that rain was something yesterday, huh?
Right. Oh, so how about those Blue Jays?
How about those Blue Jays?
Yeah,
the Leafs really blew it this year.
Yeah.
They're trying to ratchet down the tension. Clearly not in relation to the conversation that's going on at all.
Not relevant.
But it tells us a lot. Things are getting tense. We need to calm down. We need to sidestep the conversation. We need to take a couple of minutes to just chill out.
Right. That's a good example. It's changing the subject, which violates the relevance principle,
yeah.
But in a very deliberate way with a clear intention that everybody recognizes.
Yeah. And then finally, we've got manner. So again, when we're flouting, we're intentionally breaking rules, but there's a wink and a nod there, right? We talked about manner or the way in which we speak. We want to be clear in the way in which we speak. So if I am unclear intentionally, I am telling you something. Let's just say it was not an incredible date.
Right. Yeah. It was not awesome.
Yeah.
It wasn't awesome. Okay. So not awesome could mean any number of things. Definitely vague and ambiguous, but maybe everything I need to know. So there's ways that we play games breaking these rules, but everyone's kind of in on it, and that communicates a lot as well.
Yeah. So that's what Grace called flouting.
Now, the key here, of course, is that everyone involved shares a context, and it's done in good faith.
Right.
Right. And it can be done for humor. It can be done for diplomacy. It can be done to signal that there's more beneath the surface, but that I'm not at liberty to disclose right now.
Right.
Like, there's lots of things that are clear communications that we deliver by breaking these rules in obvious ways. So those are cooperative violations. They're called flouting.
Yeah. So what about uncooperative violations? What would that look like?
Well, and here's where we get into what I would call bad faith communication practices.
Yeah. So deception would be an example of that. Or and let's just go through them one at a time. So let's start with quantity.
The quantity one, it's like, well, you can combine quantity and quality in the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
Right.
Is an expression of some of this. You can mislead people by being selective about what facts you present. And people do this all the time in the media. You can take certain facts out of context.
Yeah.
And just cherry pick them and present them in a way that leads people to draw a certain conclusion that's false, even though you haven't made any false statements. So you can string together selectively chosen true statements that deliberately lead someone to draw a false inference, even though you haven't lied.
Reality television's really bad for this, right?
Yes.
I mean, the media in general is bad for this, but like they'll do a talking head interview with somebody and they'll put them on the screen and they'll be saying something and then they'll cut away to, you know, some B-roll stock footage of something else that's happening and they'll take a part of the interview and they'll splice it in and it sounds like a full sentence, but they're actually just cherry picking words to try and construct whatever narrative that they want to construct.
The editors tell a story, whether it's accurate or not. So you can play with quantity of information. Taking something out of context is playing with the quantity of information. You've given them one little snippet, but without sufficient background.
The Simpsons did a great job of one of the, I don't know if you remember that episode where Homer had a babysitter and there was he had a Venus de Milo made out of, like, it was a gummy Venus de Milo.
Okay.
And it got stuck to the backside of her pants because he lost it in the car and he went and he grabbed it. And he was like, oh, I was just trying to grab that sweet, sweet candy. And they cut it up and she said, I was just trying to grab the sweet, sweet can.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
So quality of information, is like just lying, deliberately lying or saying something with a sense of certainty that's not justified.
So we talked about that as an unintentional, right?
Right.
If you were to say, oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure we hit the numbers. But then if you were to actively deceive me.
Just lying. Yeah. Just saying things that you know to be false. For sure.
I don't think we need to give examples of that. Hopefully you know what line
Hopefully
means.
That one's clear.
I don't want to unpack that.
Totally. The relevance one, this is where you get into things like stonewalling, changing the subject, whataboutism,
right.
Non-answers, diverting back to your talking points. These ones are sneaky and slippery. They're not as obvious as you just lied to me. It's
right.
You just pivoted in a weird way.
Yeah.
And now the conversation's about something else. This isn't what I want to be talking about.
We already hit on this when politicians answer the question that they
All
want
the
to have been asked instead of the question that they were actually asked.
Mm-hmm. They've got a stock answer.
Yeah.
So the relevance one is one of the most common ways of being uncooperative, I think.
And then manner, or the way in which we talk. So
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky, right? Deliberately using an uncommon phrase like sexual relations,
yeah,
which if you look up in a dictionary, meant intercourse. Okay, so technically true,
yeah.
But also very misleading in light of the facts that came out later. That's a good example of deliberately wordsmithing.
Yes.
And trying to get away with it on a technicality.
Yeah.
Technically true. I didn't inhale.
Yeah.
Right. Being vague on purpose in order to, your intention is to deceive.
Yeah.
And that's what matters here. It's uncooperative.
If anyone's wondering, we're talking about Bill Clinton. So if you weren't around in 1995.
Right. Yeah. They asked
him
if he'd ever smoked marijuana back when that was scandalous for him to have said yes. And
yeah.
He's like, yes, I did in college, but I didn't inhale. I like Barack Obama's answer.
I did inhale.
Well, he said, yeah. Of course I inhaled. That's the whole point.
Yeah. A violation of manner would be using weird jargon or answering a part of the question, but not the whole question.
You can tell when someone's using evasive language,
yeah.
Where they're trying to make sure that what they say is technically true,
mm-hmm.
while also deliberately deceiving you.
Yeah. So if someone's a manager, right? I sent Jim the email. Like, okay, you might have sent Jim the email. Did you follow up with him? He's on your team. You're supposed to be managing your team. Well, I sent him the email. I can't tell you what he did afterwards. Like, why can't you tell me you're the manager?
Right. Or I sent it to him 5 minutes before this meeting and
right.
2 months after he needed it.
Yeah.
But I did send
but
him
I
the
did
email.
Send it. Yeah. So we're obscuring some information there. Right.
Right? That one could argue is a quantity violation as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a partial truth.
Yeah.
So we will probably do another episode on deception, because it's a fascinating topic to unpack the mechanics of all the ways we deceive each other.
Yeah, especially when you put it in this context. Like, this is a really fun,
it's a tight
framework to just kind of play with and talk through.
Yeah. So bottom line with these uncooperative violations, trust breaks down, because if you're not cooperating with somebody, that's the frustrating feeling we get when a conversation starts to go sideways. It's like, this doesn't feel cooperative or helpful.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's an honest mistake. It's just you haven't thought through how to present your part of the communication in a way that's most helpful.
Well, maybe you broke one of these maxims and you didn't even realize it, right?
For sure.
Maybe you weren't clear. And so someone's answering a question that they thought you asked, but that wasn't the information you were looking for because you didn't give enough of a quality question in the first place.
Well, that's an interesting point, because so far we've talked about this from the perspective of the person, let's say, answering a question or providing good information.
Yeah.
You could equally apply these on the asking side, like make sure you ask high quality questions.
And I think that honestly, that's where there's going to be more skin in the game anyway. Like if you can make sure that you are meeting these four maxims when you're communicating with a person, it will make for less breakdown. I feel like that's a beautiful way to sort of summarize this whole thing. We want to be on the same page as a person. How do we do that? With quantity, quality, relation, and manner.
Yeah. And remember that to look at the communication as a cooperative endeavor. We're cooperating to try
yeah.
to achieve some common goal.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be useful to state what that is up front. So set the tone, set the context. Here's what I want to get out of this conversation.
Yep.
Here's the goal. Now you know what cooperative is, and you can tailor everything you say to make sure it's in service of that goal.
And you can use that as a guiding principle too. If things start to become adversarial, okay, where did I go sideways, right? What am I not hitting here
yeah.
in terms of these four maxims?
So lessons here, keep these in mind, keep it cooperative. If you're in a leadership role, mm-hmm. Another example that just occurred to me, people often get frustrated when they get, like you're at a town hall and senior leadership is speaking and what comes out sounds like super sanitized corporate speak.
Yeah. Or nowadays, ChatGPT wrote it for you.
That's another one. People just want to be leveled with.
Yeah.
And if it sounds too formal or too polished, It's like, ah, you're handling me. I feel like you're handling me. I want you to talk to me.
Yeah, I think that's a good one for manner as well, right? If you run every email that you send through ChatGPT and you send it out, like the way AI writes right now, it's very easy to tell if you're familiar with it at all. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It has sort of a generic style. If suddenly your communications are in a different voice from what someone's used to from you, mm-hmm. it's like, did you write this? Or that's not to say that AI can't be useful nope. in helping you clarify your thoughts. It can be super useful, but I think people are developing an intuition for that sort of thing. So you want to keep it real. Speak as yourself to the extent you can. And if you're in a leadership position, level with people and speak to them in plain English.
Yeah.
Avoid the overly polished HR corporate speak.
Yeah, scrubbing everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, oh, we're going to be right-sizing and we're going through a reorg. And like, just say, you know layoffs are coming and we know it sucks. Just say what you mean.
Well, especially in that sort of a situation where you're already delivering bad news. Mm-hmm. So people are going to be upset with you. But if you give them more ammunition to be not only upset with the message, but also the medium.
The way you delivered it.
Yeah.
Just be genuine. If you're going to punch me in the face, don't pretend you're just adjusting my eyeliner or something, right? You just hit me.
Oh, I slipped. Sorry. I needed...
Mosquito.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
If there's a mosquito, fine. But if there isn't and you want to hit me, just hit me.
I tripped, fell, and caught myself on your face.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So those are the four maxims: quantity, quality, relevance, and manner.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of challenges. Keep these in mind or pick one and keep it top of mind this week and intentionally apply it in your communication. Maybe it's being more direct, which would be manner. Maybe it's being more explicit about your level of confidence or uncertainty, which would be the quality one. Pick one and incorporate it into your communication this week and just practice it. And also be on the lookout for it. Notice when someone applies it well and how that lands and how effective it is. Notice when maybe it's missing.
Just to add to that, if you're in communication with someone regularly and it's someone that you want to share this with, send this video to them or this podcast to them. And then you can be on the same page. You've got some shared backgrounds in terms of what you're trying to do and you can coach one another mm-hmm. on those four maxims and really get good at it.
These are worth internalizing. Mm-hmm. And if they become instinctive over time, what you'll find is that your communication is more concise, more clear, and just more effective. Not just in terms of the information, but the quality of the interaction. Because when we follow these rules or when we flout them in obvious ways that are still cooperative, we're showing respect and we're being helpful. And that's what builds solid working relationships over time.
All right. Thanks for being here with us. Thanks for going through Grice's Maxims. Hopefully you learned something and
subscribe. If you like this, forward to a friend.
And if you'd like to work with either Chris or myself, you can find us on LinkedIn.
As always, we hope this was useful. Thanks for tuning in.